Good evening, you're watching Left, Right and Centre. I'm Vishnu Shom. Tonight, a recount of official COVID fatalities in Bihar shows deaths at 9,375, up from the earlier official figure of 5,424 deaths. This after the High Court asked for an audit. Now, this is shocking. How many have actually died of COVID in India? Will we ever know the truth? But first, let's give you a couple of examples, one of Bihar and also of Maharashtra. Why Maharashtra, you ask? Well, because Maharashtra has also been collecting its data, some of which is coming later, but they have diligently been adding that data on a day later, perhaps 2 days later. And in every single medical handout for the last couple of months, they've actually said that that data they are presenting is incomplete. When they get more, they'll keep adding it more. But there has still been a backlog of deaths. The circumstances of the backlogs different for Bihar and Maharashtra. In the case of Bihar, it was as a result of a High Court ordered revision or attempt, High Court order for the Bihar government to go back and see what the actual numbers were, that they realized that the total deaths were at 5,458, but there is a backlog of a whopping 3,951, which is why now the total number of cases has gone up 72%. It's well over 9,000. In the case of Maharashtra, the total deaths were at 25,994. There was a backlog that did build up, but this was tabulated. But what we're trying to say is that it's this backlog of deaths which is problematic when one is trying to compile actual statistics as far as COVID is concerned. Well, joining us now, Bhramar Mukherjee. She's a health data scientist, a chair of biostatistics at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. And for months, Bhramar has been saying one thing essentially, that the numbers are wrong. The numbers are wrong. They are incomplete. Even if they are not fudged, they are inaccurate. They are underreported. And now we have this situation when the Bihar government all of a sudden ups the number by nearly 4,000 overnight. So, Bhramar, what does this indicate?
So, thank you, Vishnu, for having me on this show. You said this is shocking, but this is really not shocking to me. I think this is a welcome step that the official reporting is being revised, because all modeling and all investigative journalism and media reports and selective states have come forward indicates that the number of infections and the number of deaths are massively underreported in India. And I think that a fortified vital surveillance system bolstered with comprehensive reporting and real-time analysis is really at the heart of fighting this pandemic, as well as deciding on future policy action. So this is really, I would say that all the states should really think about revising their death reporting, and also in general, a systemic change into how deaths are being recorded and reported in India.
Bhramar, now, you know, you've written recently about it. This was with a couple of other authors that published it. MEDRXIV.org, you know, and I went through that entire report, and, you know, there are expert claims versus official figures. So I want to try and understand what some of the conclusions which you have reached. So let's have that graphic up, if we can. Now, let's have this up full screen, because what this actually indicates is certain numbers in the first phase and certain numbers in the second phase. This is model-based underreporting for infections, which has been Bhramar's argument. In the first phase, by a factor of 11, they were underreported. In the second phase, they were underreported by a factor of 26. Now, let's go to the next set of graphics over here. The underreporting of deaths. Earlier, you saw cases. Now, this is the underreporting of deaths. In the first wave, by a factor of 3.5. In the second wave, by a factor of 5.77. So what does this actually tally up to? Let's go to the next graphic. This next graphic actually shows you the official figure on the 15th of May is 25 million cases. If you can just play that graphic, right? The official figure of, and we have that graphic, we aired it a few minutes back, and we just aired it one more time. The official figure on the 15th of May is 25 million cases. That's the first and second wave. The expert claim is 491 million cases by the 15th of May. This is the first and second wave. So these are in terms of the number of cases. Now let's take a look at the final statistic, which we have over here, which is the number of deaths, what the official figures say and what the expert figures say. And so the official figures say on the 15th of May, and change that graphic, 270,000 deaths in the first and second wave. On the 15th of May, 1.21 million deaths in the first and second wave. So that's a factor of, that's huge. What accounts, Brahmar, for this incredible discrepancy? Is it all fudging? Is it because people don't know? Is it because when a person dies, you don't necessarily know if they've died of COVID? It could be anything else. Death isn't often by COVID. COVID could have induced death, right? By other yes. reasons, a heart attack, for example, yes. a lung infection, right. for example. Is that
right.
the problem?
So, yeah, right. Let us just decouple and try to understand this problem. So, first of all, capturing all COVID deaths and infections are nearly impossible for any country. And this is not specific to India, because there are certain structure into the, because you have to get tested in order to get classified as a COVID infection, right? So let us first come to that underreporting of cases versus infections. A large part of this portfolio is actually asymptomatic infections, people who never experienced a symptom and never got tested. And then there is a part where people do not get tested because there are lack of test availability and also stigma associated with testing. And then there is a part where, you know, somehow the counts are not getting reported because there is a bottleneck in terms of how much tests people are offering at each of the states. So there's a way to validate this estimate, and a lot of efforts have happened. Seroprevalence surveys across the country, which are very consistent with this underreporting factor of between 15 to 20, and 1 out of 15 or 1 out of 20 infections are being reported. So I'd say that our estimate of 492 million infections, which is 36% of the population of India, is on the conservative side, because the last national sero survey already showed 21%. But then coming to deaths, I think there are several reasons, right? Even beyond the COVID-19 pandemic, there are reports that 1 out of 5 deaths in India are medically certified. And this is because many of the deaths actually happen outside hospital Correct. And healthcare facilities, right? So, and for COVID, I think if you don't get tested, and also, if the test is somehow false negative, you're not classified as COVID deaths. That's a part of the chunk. Then there is another part of the unreported deaths where COVID-related comorbidities are assigned as the cause of death, not COVID. And then there is this backlog because there is a delay in terms of the death reporting system, the civil registration system, and that's backlog. So we are getting numbers in a delayed, staggered manner. So we have to put all of these, and then probably, and again, I have never said that the data are fudged. I have just said that they're imperfectly and inaccurately reported. And
some would interpret that as essentially being fudged. if it's inaccurate, if it's not truthful, you know, fudge is just another word for it. Fair enough. I won't put words in your mouth. Carry on.
Yeah. But I think that why does it matter? We also have to understand that why death not being reported. It's not just a question of reflecting dishonor to the entire life and legacy of a person who lived, but also exactly. It really stunts our future policy. But so that's why we estimate, like using lots of assumptions about what happened with the underreported infections, our model predicts 1.21 million deaths by May 15. There is, of course, an uncertainty associated with it. But if you look at the New York Times death calculator, the estimates range from 600,000 deaths to 4.2 million deaths on the same dates around May 15. So there is a wide range of variation. And
But Robert, I must ask you one more question. You've been criticized completely on Twitter, right? Which is not a very difficult thing to do, as you know, in our social media or whatever it is. Everyone is... But the point is this, when you come across figures like this and what the Bihar government is doing, and I agree with you completely, they must be complimented for coming out with these numbers now, right? Does that, is this a, in a sense, a, you know, for you a feeling that you were right all along, that what you believed in and what the numbers indicated to you, what the trends indicated to you, that there was mass underreporting was in fact correct?
So, you know, I just think that as scientists, you never really have that attitude that I told you so, I was right. Because we put forward our ideas for scientific criticism. And if there is scientific criticism, not political criticism, I think that really enriches and refines and improves our work. So I'm not at all intimidated that the work was criticized, because for the underreporting of, as I said, of cases, we could validate it. There is a way to validate our models if the government will actually release all-cause mortality data from 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021, mm-hmm. so that we can see how much excess deaths have happened without really attributing them to COVID, because many countries have done that calculation. There is a paper which actually does global excess death calculation for 77 countries, and India is left out of that because we don't have that data. We do not have age and sex disaggregated hospitalization, fatality, and infection data from India. So it makes it very difficult to understand who are dying and how many people have died. If you don't understand the magnitude of the problem, how are you going to really think about solutions? That's my issue. It's not about proving myself correct.
Right. Well, Dr. Mukherjee, good to speak to you. We'll keep speaking to you, you know, on this topic and several other themes linked to COVID and what we are seeing now. Thanks very much for being with us. I'd also like to introduce my other guests. Dr. Rahul Pandit is a member of the Maharashtra COVID Task Force. Professor Sitabra Sinha is a professor of physics and computational biology at the Institute of Mathematical Sciences in Chennai. Dr. Prabhat Jha is the director of the Center of Global Health Research. And Dr. Prabhat Kumar Sinha, who's a senior doctor and former IGIMS superintendent. I'd like to thank you all very much for being with us. Dr. Sinha, let me come to you first. Is this a wake-up call for us, the numbers in Bihar, that perhaps we need to be doing a lot more with every state?
Actually, I will frankly confess that in Bihar, death registry in hospitals are lacking. When I was medical superintendent, then at that time we started in IGMS death registry so that we can record the actual cause of death. And as the Dr. Brahmer was telling, says right, that we should have a death registry so that we can know age, sex, and everything related to death that can be recorded. This is lacking in India as a whole. In Bihar in particularly, this is a lacuna through which we are not generating data exactly. But still, there are certain things in Bihar, particularly in rural Bihar, people do not go for death registry or to even municipality to take that death certificate. They simply go and burn the body, or they go to the grave and they put their bodies there, but they do not inform the authority, particularly that's municipality true. Authority.
Yeah.
So this is a big lacuna which government should make it mandatory. Then only it can happen.
Yeah.
And this is not only restricted only to Bihar. It's in every state of India. You have shown in this slide about Maharashtra. There also they have come out with data afterwards.
But a day afterwards, 2 days afterwards, and making the point that they're not getting data on a real-time basis, which is fair,
that's
I think.
That's true. RTLS, you have a record. Data generation is there from your records. If you don't have records, how can you generate the data?
The data they were getting is 2 days old or 3 days old, right? And so when they were releasing it, they were saying that it's not current.
Vishnu, even 2 or 3 days, I will agree. But there are certain people, they do not go to the municipality or to those resource center where the data is generated.
Sure.
So after even 7 days, 10 days, when a health authority has gone and inquired about, then they are coming. Secondly, about COVID, I am telling you, in COVID, number of tests done and the number of patients with COVID are very, there's a big difference. Because all the population in rural area, they do not have access to the COVID.
All right, Dr. Sinha, 1 second. I just wanted to go across to my other panelists as well. Dr. Jha, let me come to you. How important is it for us to get an absolute fix on numbers in a situation like COVID, not only because we want to remember and honor those who've lost their lives or think about those who've been infected, but how is an accurate fix on numbers critical in fighting the infection itself?
Well, thank you. First of all, we should congratulate the Bihar and Maharashtra governments for their bravery in updating the numbers. You can't bury the truth. You can't just ignore what is happening. And that's just, it's really applaudable that they did release these updated numbers. Why is it important? It's not important simply for useless epidemiologists like me to get data. It's important for the country to be able to have a roadmap out of the pandemic. And I'll give you very specific things. India's vaccine supply is limited. The best hope to be able to combat or reduce a third viral wave, which is inevitable, will be to prioritize where vaccines and in hotspots.
Right.
Know the hotspots, you need data. Today, everyone who gets tested in India and in many places where deaths occur, the Aadhaar card is recorded. So the Indian government does have data on the age, sex, whether they're educated or not, and the PIN code of all of the cases and deaths in India. If those were released and you had a giant map of the hotspots of India, India would have a way that says, this is a place where there's lots of community transmission occurring. That's where we should have vaccine clinics. That's where we should have extra efforts.
Right.
So it's really important. Without data, you cannot walk out of the pandemic.
All
it's
right.
not useful All right. just for epidemiologists like me or creating data. It's essential for the government and for India to walk out of the pandemic to have these data.
All right. I just want to go across to Professor Sithabra Sinha. Professor Sithabra Sinha, if this is what is the reality in Bihar, there have been reports of mass underreporting of deaths in Uttar Pradesh, several other states. Do you believe that, you know, we would never be able to get to the truth and that the truth is very far away from us?
Thanks for having me on the discussion. Yes, to some extent, what you're saying is true. I mean, even in developed countries, this would always be a question that, you know, whether a death that is reported is due to COVID or because of something else. So that question is always there. In India in particular, it becomes compounded by the problem of data collecting. You know, people may not come forward for whatever reason. The data may not be reported for whatever reason and so on. But you can, to some extent, try to gauge how much, misreporting has been there by comparing between the trends for the confirmed cases and the number of reported deaths. So, you know, both have been under question. You know, there have been lots of questions whether the total number of cases that have been reported has been severely underreported, whether it's a factor of 10 or whether it's a factor of 20 or whatever. You know, and death, of course, has been underreported, as has now been made clear. So the question is, by looking at the ratio of the underreporting of confirmed and deaths, do you see any trends in the different states? So just to give an example, if you look at India as a whole, you find that the ratio of deaths to confirmed cases have fluctuated between 4% and about 0.5%, right? So that's not a big range.
Okay, I just wanted to, finally go across to Dr. Rahul Pandit as well. So the Maharashtra numbers have been very high, very sadly. But there's always been this effort, as I understand it, to say that, look, we don't have all the numbers right now. We are going to keep updating the numbers. So at the same, but if you were to add up the backlog of numbers, it just indicates how difficult the process of getting the full numbers is, right? Could you tell us about why it's so difficult to get numbers on a 24-hour basis?
Yeah, good evening, Soman. Good evening, everyone. I completely agree that Maharashtra has always said that we would be not hiding a single death or a single reported case which is positive. We would always be reporting it. But it is true that it takes a day or two before the data gets compiled for it to be actually released out. And the reason is, from the hinterland, from the interiors of Maharashtra, the data has to come We have to look at the all-cause mortality. We have to look at where the data is coming from, which pin code is coming from, before we can give out exact numbers. And that basically adds on to a day or so of work. And that is what is happening essentially, that we are having this data come up a little bit late. But we have been truthfully updating every single death which has happened or every single case which has happened. And unless and until we have the entire hospital system, whether it's public or private, connected electronically, and its email is just not enough, we need to have real-time data coming in. And this pandemic is a good wake-up call for the entire country to actually do that. We are the IT capital of the world. We should be able to have this kind of real-time data come into our computers, the head of the state or whichever capital of the state. And then ultimately, the country should have its own data, which will basically prove as a roadmap for us to move forward, whether it's pandemic or it's all-cause mortality, which also tells us that which are the diseases we need to focus ourselves on.
Right.
We're talking about lifestyle diseases like diabetes and hypertension, yes. But there may be something else which may be brewing and which might not be very
sure.
evident.
Correctly. So again, the point being that the accurate sort of collection of data is so very important. I'm afraid I'm completely out of time on this discussion. I'd like to thank you all very much for being with us. I'm going to quickly move on now to some international news, some of the big stories that we've been tracking. Now, the United States president says that he is now about to enter the next phase of his relations with several other countries in the world. He's on his first visit outside the United States, and one of the countries he'll be focusing on is Russia. That's because he's likely to meet Vladimir Putin as well. So he says the United States is back, and that is a reference to some of the big international priorities. He's begun his first overseas tour as U.S. president. There's the G7 summit and also a talks with the Russian president on the cards. Now, there is no love lost between Biden and Vladimir Putin, but if there is an attempt at righting that situation, it's certainly very important from a global standpoint. The Myanmar junta continues to take action against the deposed civilian leader Aung San Suu Kyi with corruption charges over claims that she accepted illegal payments of gold and more than $500,000 in cash. This is a claim which has been made by the state media. She's in trouble with corruption charges which have been put on her. The junta says that Suu Kyi had accepted illegal gold and cash payments. So this is a huge problem. Now, a few more details. The country, Burma, has been in trouble for quite some time now as a result of what we saw earlier on with the junta coming in, a crackdown, a brutal one, which resulted in the deaths of many civilians, nearly 850 civilians killed by security forces on a near daily protests against the coup itself. And finally, let's take a look at Nigeria, which is, now remember, Nigeria is a country which actually operates Ku, which is the Indian version of Twitter, but they banned Twitter and said that Twitter must register locally for this ban to end. They said Twitter must agree not to let a platform be used by those promoting activities inimical to the country. Familiar language perhaps seen elsewhere as well. So there's Ku now in Twitter instead of Twitter itself. These are the conditions on which Twitter might actually be allowed to come back. Those are some of the big stories we've been tracking today, some international stories. Out of time on Left, Right and Center from all of us here. Goodbye.